Good morning and welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. If you could please find a place to sit. And we have a couple announcements this morning. First of all, it says, Attention Men. We would like to form a temporary men's choir to perform a fun song for the Mother's Day service on May 10th. Rehearsals would take place from 11:30 a.m. to 12:15 p.m. for three Sundays, April 19th and 26th and May 3rd. We'd also meet at 9 a.m. on May 10th to warm up before the service begins. Please contact Michelle Hoyt or Nancy Brott ASAP if you or your sons are interested in joining. The second announcement is from Phil Smith. The Form and Function Committee would like to invite everyone to view the concrete stained colors in the choir area after the service. That's over there. You can see they got a few set up there and some samples on the floor. And vote for their favorite. We will be staining the choir area floor soon. So, Phil, where do they vote? Okay. You'll be taking your opinions into consideration. And now we have an announcement from Mark.
Good morning. Just a quick stewardship update and a couple questions. We've got 16,000 raised so far. We'll be tracking it on the rocket ship out there. It's not quite accurate right now, but we'll be doing that. Just to answer a couple questions. Maybe we can get phone calls through canvassers. You got a brochure in the mail. We need everyone to turn in the pledge card. It's on the back of the brochure. If you've thrown the brochure away, you need an extra pledge card. They're in the church office next to the lockbox. You can turn them in the basket. This gets passed. You can turn them in the morning offering. You can turn them in the slot box in Stephanie's office. If you've already gone online, which we encourage everyone to do, that's the best way, and put an amount, and don't want to turn a pledge card in, just let Stephanie know that so we can check you off that you've, you know, said what you're going to do. So, thanks. That's a quick update.
Thanks, everyone.
Our opening words for this morning, come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come and you shall know peace and joy. please take a moment to say hello and introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
Morning, John.
Please rise in body and spirit and join in singing our first hymn, number 6, Just As Long As I Have Breath. Country Unitarian Universalist Church. Here at LUC, we work to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Jerry Flakus, and I'm, I guess, the de facto worship associate for this morning, a member of the Social Action Committee, which is putting on the service this morning. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, friends, and members, whoever they are wherever they are on life's journey, and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in the social hall after the service. And after that, stop by the welcome table to find out more about our church. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to everyone joining in. Like and follow Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church on Facebook in order to get ongoing information about our activities, and check out our webpage at lcuuc.org to stay current on services and events. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all of your electronics that you may have here with you today. And again, welcome to all here this morning. We are so pleased that you've chosen to celebrate and to worship with us. One of the ways we care for the wider community is by contributing to local food pantries through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite all the children to stay up front and enjoy the story for all.
Good morning. I have a story for you all. This story is about a boy named John, whose dad, Jim, was a UU minister. John is the oldest of four kids in his family. He has two little sisters, Karen and Ann. The youngest is his little brother, Stephen. John's dad was always busy helping people, young and old. When John was little, his dad was a minister at a hospital. When John was five, his dad worked with kids at a YMCA. When John was seven, the family moved to Washington, D.C., and his dad was the assistant minister at a big UU church. John's dad was so busy helping people that he was not home very much. John liked summer vacation because his whole family would go to visit his grandparents in Wyoming, where he and his dad would go searching for dinosaur fossils. When John was 12, his dad moved again, this time to the city of Boston. His dad's job there was helping people with very little money find a place to live. One Sunday, just after John's 13th birthday, there was a TV news report about police fighting with people who were marching for equal rights to vote. John's dad saw the police hitting the marchers on TV as they tried to march across a bridge in a town called Selma in the state of Alabama. John's dad was upset about what he saw on TV. Our UU principles say that each person is important. All people need a voice. We can build a fair and peaceful world. And we need to be kind in all that we do. His dad's work was always about those principles, helping people no matter who they were and no matter what color their skin was. In Alabama, which had slavery before the Civil War, laws were made after the war that made it hard to vote if you were African American. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. had been working for equal voting rights and civil rights in Alabama and other states. He was going to go with the marchers, and he asked other ministers to come and march across the bridge with him to call for the right to vote for all people. John's dad told John and his mother that he would go to Selma to march with Reverend King because he believed it was the right thing to do. John didn't give it much thought. Alabama was far away, but as a minister, his dad was always helping people and doing what he believed was right. That week, John's mother had a phone call from his dad. He and two other UU ministers had just finished supper at a restaurant and were going to walk to a church for a meeting with Reverend King. Later that night, their family had another phone call. John's dad and the two ministers had been beaten up by four men. The men were angry that people from other states were coming to their town and marching for changes to the voting laws. One of the men hit John's dad in the head with a club, and he was seriously hurt and in a hospital. John's mom left to go to the hospital in Alabama. 2 days later, John's dad died. A minister friend of their family, named Dr. Mendelson, told John the news. John cried. And so did Dr. Mendelson. John's dad had done a brave thing, standing for full and equal justice for all people. It didn't seem fair that he would be hurt and die for that. The President of the United States talked about John's dad in a speech to Congress and asked for a new law that made sure everyone had the right to vote. After his dad's funeral, John's family moved to Wyoming to be near his grandparents. John kept his feelings inside and didn't let them out. As he grew up, he often didn't take very good care of himself. And even after he got married and had children, he wouldn't talk about his dad and how he died. Then John became sick, really sick. His family was worried about him. His daughters came to see him in the hospital. John almost died, but he slowly got better he started thinking a lot about his dad, Jim. It was 50 years ago that Jim died, and 50 years since the marchers for the right to vote were finally able to make their way across the bridge. It was 50 years ago that Congress passed the law the president had asked for in his speech, the Voting Rights Act, 1965. There would be a ceremony at the bridge in Selma, and John's mom was specially invited. John told her if she went, he would go too. That ceremony happened 3 weeks ago. John was there, along with his mom, Marie, and his sisters, Karen and Anne, and others of his family. He brought his wheelchair along in case he didn't feel strong enough, but when it came time to cross the bridge, he walked across, holding hands with his family. There's a special memorial near the bridge with a picture of John's dad on it, honoring that he died while working for justice for everyone. There's more of that work to do, and we can all help to do it. John is proud of his dad, Unitarian Universalist minister James J. Reed, and John hopes his dad is proud of him for finishing the march he wasn't able to do.
May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. So please help join in singing the children to their classroom. The song is called "For You Shall Go Out," and the words are written in your order of service. Today's offertory will be given to the James Reeb Fund for Multicultural Ministries and Leadership, which supports multicultural growth throughout the UUA and in UU congregations. This includes supporting congregations doing voting rights work, racial justice organizing, and programs such as Finding Our Way Home, a retreat for religious professionals of color. Any money not designated for LCUUC will be given to this fund. our thanks for these gifts given and received for the work of the James Reeve Fund. This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Hi, this is Paula. Today is the funeral of a friend and colleague, and I hope you keep her family and her college-age daughter in your thoughts and your hearts. She leaves behind also many people and children that she's worked with and helped over the years as a clinical psychologist.
Hi, this is Mike. Please light a candle for my wife, Helen. Sorry. She's facing some multiple medical concerns, and so just please keep her in your thoughts. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Bill. Please light a candle for my niece, who woke up Thursday morning to find her 16-year-old son dead of an aneurysm. Obviously, they're shocked and brokenhearted, and it just defies all logic, but there it is. Thank you.
This is Mary. Please light a candle of sorrow for Greg's cousin, Andrea Dykstra. He's on his way to Iowa, where she will very likely be taking off life support today. She has two adult children, Ben and Amy, both who are dependent upon her and also have very substantial health concerns that prevent them from working. So we're just worried about that part of our family. But in all the sadness, I am going to say one candle of joy for the final four.
I'm Amy. Please light a candle of joy for our daughter, Isabel, who turns 14 tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Amy. Please light a candle of sorrow for my dear friend Danny, who died suddenly yesterday.
Al here. Two candles of support for the Krill family and Marie Brim's family.
This is Tim. Please light a candle of concern for Sue and Jeff Blackwell, members of this congregation. They're in the process of moving Sue's dad to a memory care unit. It's a tough transition.
And we light the last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply, but which we have not named here today.
I saw a great t-shirt a few months ago. It proclaimed, "You can pretend to care, you can't pretend to show up." 50 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. called for Unitarian Universalist ministers to show up in Selma, Alabama. And we showed up by the hundreds, and not just ministers. It was a watershed moment for the nation and for our faith. Two of the UUs who showed up died, the Reverend James Reed and Viola Liuzzo. The movie Selma powerfully recalls the period. Soon, I will be in Alabama with the UUA Board of Trustees to participate in a commemoration, and you can participate wherever you are. I urge all of our congregations to observe Selma Sunday on March the 8th. My African-American colleagues have called Selma Sunday a Sankofa moment. The term comes from an African proverb that speaks to the wisdom of bringing things from the past that are useful for the present. You can't pretend to show up. I wonder where Dr. King might ask us to show up if he were alive today. So much has changed in the last 50 years. So much is still the same. The kind of overt, flagrant, confrontational racism of the Deep South in the 1960s is mostly gone. There's been dramatic progress. We have African American mayors, members of Congress, and of course, an African American president. We see black people in prominent positions in all areas of life. Things today are also a mess. Today we don't have lynchings, but we see black men killed by police with impunity. We are seeing cynical efforts to make it more difficult for African Americans to vote. The levels of incarceration of young African American men is a national scandal. Today, racism persists, but it has evolved. The racial and ethnic situation in America is also a lot more complicated today. African Americans are no longer the largest minority group. Latinos now outnumber blacks, and there's been a large increase in people of Asian descent. There's been so much intermarriage and so much interracial adoption that our old racial and ethnic categories are breaking down. In my own life, I've seen the racial identity boxes I'm supposed to choose from change half a dozen times. When we lump diverse groups together as people of color, we emphasize important commonalities in the experience of oppression. However, that same language obscures the fact that there are important differences. As the recent cases of the deaths of African American men at the hands of police demonstrate, blacks face levels of oppression that are worse than those faced by most Latinos, Asians, or GLBTQ people. Native Americans face their own unique challenges. Black men are far more at risk than black women. Being a fair-skinned, highly educated Latino is very different from being an uneducated Latino with dark skin who speaks no English. Today, showing up means being ready not just for a big demonstration in Selma, Washington, Phoenix, or New York. It also means bearing witness to the injustice in our own home communities, whether that be Boston, Boise, Bismarck, or Baton Rouge. It means showing up at City Hall, at school, and at work. It means letting others take the lead, just as we did in Selma. I am proud of the way Unitarian Universalists showed up in Selma 50 years ago. Today, Selma is everywhere. We all live in Selma. We need to show up wherever injustice calls us to bear witness. My prayer is our commemoration of what happened 50 years ago is truly a Sankofa moment for all of us.
I'm going to now lead us in a guided loving kindness meditation where we will extend loving kindness, a radiant energy of love from our hearts. Research shows that this type of meditation is beneficial in many ways, including decreased bias toward minorities and increased empathy and compassion for all. Please close your eyes for this guided meditation. Take a long, deep breath and relax your body. We will start by sending loving kindness to ourselves, because before we can truly love others, we must love ourselves. It's important to work on the qualities of ourselves that prevent us from loving ourselves and others, be it our anger, our jealousy, impatience, or other qualities. You can repeat these words silently to yourself after I say them. May I be filled with loving kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. may I be happy. Now think of someone who is close to you, whom you care about, who has been good or inspiring to you. Get a feel for his or her presence and visualize this person, or silently say their name. We will now extend loving kindness to them. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. And now think of an acquaintance, someone you don't really know. Maybe someone you've seen at church today. Maybe someone at work. Even without knowing their name, get a sense of the person, imagining their face. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. Now let's think of those who have been directly affected by racism. Perhaps a family member of Tony Robinson. Get a feel for their presence. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. And lastly, let us send loving kindness to those who commit acts of racism, be it in thought or deed, those who are angry and violent and cause pain to others. We wish them to be free of the confusion, the anger, and the self-centeredness that drives them to think and act in the way that they do. They too strive to avoid suffering. May you be filled with loving kindness. May you be well. May you be peaceful and at ease. May you be happy. Now just take one more long, deep breath. You can now open your eyes. We're going to show the video, Glory, from the movie Selma.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, 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 glory.
Now the war is not over, victory isn't won.
every man, woman, and child. Even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. The biggest weapon is to stay peaceful. We sing, our music is the cuts that we bleed through. Somewhere in the dream we had an epiphany. Now we right the wrongs in history. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours.
The responsive reading is number 584 in the Gray Hymnal, A Network of Mutual Reality. We are caught in an inescapable network of mutual reality, tied in a single garment of destiny. There are some things in our social system to which all of us ought to be maladjusted. We must evolve, for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. Before it is too late, we must narrow the gaping chasm between our proclamations of peace and our lowly deeds, which precipitate and perpetuate war. We must pursue peaceful ends through peaceful means.
March 7th marked the 50th anniversary of the attempted march from Selma to Montgomery. The killing of civil rights activist Jimmie Lee Jackson by an Alabama state trooper inspired this voting rights march. When marchers were crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge on their way out of Selma, they were gassed and beaten by Alabama state troopers in a vicious attack that has come to be known as Bloody Sunday. I'm going to be reading excerpts from Selma's Challenge by Mark Morrison Reed, which chronicles the Unitarian Universalist involvement in the events surrounding the Selma March. In the early hours of Monday, March 8, 1965, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. dispatched a telegram that read, "In the vicious maltreatment of defenseless citizens of Selma, where old men or old women and young children were gassed and clubbed at random, we have witnessed an eruption of the disease of racism which seeks to destroy all of America. No American is without responsibility. All are involved in the sorrow that rises from Selma to contaminate every crevice of our national life. The people of Selma will struggle on for the soul of the nation, but it is fitting that all America help to bear the burden. I call, therefore, on clergy of all faiths, representative of every part of the country, to join me for a minister's march to Montgomery on Tuesday morning, March 9. In this way, all America will testify to the fact that the struggle in Selma is for the survival of democracy everywhere in our land. Along with much of the country, Reverend Orloff Miller, director of the Unitarian Universalist Association Office of the College Centers, had watched the attack on civil rights marchers when it exploded across the network news the night before. So he wasn't surprised when Reverend Homer Jack, who directed the UUA's Social Responsibility Department, called on Monday morning to say the UUA had received a telegram from King. After a quick consultation with Jack and a copy of the telegram in hand, he began phoning across the country to the College Center clergy with whom he worked. The Reverend James Reeb was in his office in the Boston neighborhood of Roxbury when the call came from the UUA around noon. Reeb, a white American, had forsaken parish ministry to work and live in the African-American community. He wanted to go to Selma. In Berkeley, California, the Reverend Clark Bolson, minister of Berkeley Fellowship of Unitarians, was driving his Plymouth Valiant convertible and listening to the noon news when he heard of King's appeal. He wanted to go. What stood in his way was the lack of money for the airfare. When he arrived home, he found a message waiting. A couple from his congregation had offered to pay his way. A day after King sent his telegram, about 45 UU ministers and 15 lay people had arrived in Selma, including Miller, Reed, and Olson. The three men ate dinner together in Walker's Cafe while down the block fate awaited them. After dinner, Miller, Olson, and Reeb walked three abreast, Reeb next to the curb, then Miller, then Olson. They crossed an alley. Four or five white locals came out of a variety store behind them on the opposite side of the street and began yelling, "Hey, you niggers!" Olson, Miller, and Reeb sped up, but the man ran at them. Olson, who was furthest from the curb, saw them best. They attacked us from behind, and at least one carried a large club, possibly a baseball bat or a length of pipe, with which he took a roundhouse swing at Jim's head. He and Miller heard it land. Olson backed away, but one of the men came after him, landing a punch that staggered him and sent his glasses flying. Miller dropped to the ground and doubled up and tried as he'd been trained to shield his head, but one kick landed on his forehead, leaving an imprint that is still visible. Reeb was also on the ground, lying stunned, as their attackers kicked them and yelled, "You want to know what it's like to be a nigger around here?" The assailants landed a few more kicks, then fled. Miller and Olson were bruised and Reeb dazed. They had to help him stand. By the time they had staggered to the SCLC office around the block to ask for help, Reeb was in great pain. In the black infirmary, Reeb lay on a stretcher, grimacing. Olson held his hand as the pain worsened. Reeb's grip tightened, then it went limp as he lapsed into unconsciousness. On Thursday, March 11th, Marie Reeb made the decision to stop using artificial means to keep her husband alive. President Johnson called to offer his condolences. Martin Luther King Jr. called, too. On Saturday, the UUA board recessed its meeting in Boston, and eight members flew to Birmingham. By the time King memorialized Reeb in Selma's Brown Chapel on Monday, March 15th, at least 109 UU ministers had gathered in Selma. UUA President Dana McLean Greeley joined ecumenical leaders on the podium with King and led the congregation in the Lord's Prayer. That evening, President Johnson addressed a joint session of Congress and introduced the Voting Rights Bill. 2 days later, word spread that a federal judge would permit the 50-mile march from Selma to Montgomery and ordered that it be protected by both state and federal governments. It would take place on Sunday. In Selma and Montgomery and across the country, people began to prepare. Jane Boyajian, the director of religious education at the UU congregation in Fairfax, Virginia, had been attending local SCLC meetings. The Reverend Walter Fauntroy approached her to say that King and the SCLC leadership wanted her to organize the national mobilization. Organizers scrambled to assemble the necessities for a five-day march of 300 people. They needed generators for the campsites, ground tarps, air mattresses, blankets, food, and water. The Reverend Eugene Pickett put out the call for members of the United Liberal Congregation in Atlanta to go if they could, or send blankets if they couldn't. The church telephone tree sprung into action, and in a single Sunday, church members supplied 250 blankets. The people converged on Selma, clergy and laity, men and women, blacks and whites, Catholics, Orthodox Christians, Protestants, Jews, Unitarian Universalists, and atheists. They came from across the United States and Canada. On Sunday afternoon, March 21st, the March to Montgomery set out, led by Martin and Coretta King, Ralph and Juanita Abernathy, Ralph Bunch, Rabbi Abraham Heschel, Dick Gregory, and other notables. Behind them came 3,200 more. Overhead, a single-engine Piper Cub dropped KKK leaflets. In Birmingham, the UU congregation prepared for a second onslaught, larger than the first. Coming to participate in the final day of the march were two buses from Rochester, New York, carrying 150, and a plane Dana Greeley had chartered from Boston, carrying 75. An anonymous member of the UU Church in Bloomington, Indiana, put up the money to charter a DC-3. All needed to be fed, given home hospitality, and returned to the church by 5 a.m., to be put on five buses and driven 100 miles to Montgomery. On the final day, among the 30,000 who marched, there were about 500 UU lay people and about 250 UU ministers. The ministers who went to Selma represented a quarter to a third of all UU ministers in full fellowship. Add to that the dozens who spent time with the Mississippi Summer Project, the Delta Ministry Project, and other efforts in the South afterwards, those who led their community's response, and the dozen ministers who participated in the UU presence in Selma through the summer of 65. It isn't a stretch to estimate that half of the 710 UU ministers in full fellowship were actively engaged in this struggle. For many, the experience changed their lives, and it brought to the UUA a sea change in attitude. The March to Montgomery was a milestone, but it was not an end to the work or the losses. Change was imminent, but it would be expensive, and the next payment came due that evening. Viola Luzzo, a part-time student at Wayne State University and wife and mother of five, had driven from Detroit to join the march, coming alone and despite her family's protest. On her arrival in Selma, she had been assigned to staff the welcoming table, greeting new arrivals. After the march, she ferried marchers back from Montgomery to Selma along Route 80. She was heading back to Montgomery to do another shuttle run when a car pulled up beside hers and a gunman shot her in the head, killing her instantly. Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law that August 6, 1965. 50 years later, voting rights have reemerged on the U.S. agenda. Conservative state legislatures have introduced a new restrictions following the Supreme Court's 2013 ruling that overturned a key part of the Voter Rights Act. In March 2015, Unitarian Universalists returned to Selma to mark the anniversary. But King's challenge could have issued today from North Carolina, or I would add Wisconsin, where new restrictions that disproportionately affect African Americans and poor voters have become law, or from Ferguson, Missouri, where for 2 weeks this past August, police in military gear pointed semi-automatic weapons and fired tear gas at African Americans protesting the police killing of a black teenager named Michael Brown. No American is without responsibility, King proclaimed. And by going to Selma 50 years ago, Unitarian Universalists came to feel that this struggle was also their own. And the struggle remains today. In the United States, a black person is killed by police every 28 hours. That's almost one black person dying every day. And we don't have to look very far to see this. Dontre Hamilton was shot 14 times in Red Arrow Park in Milwaukee last April. And just a few weeks ago in Madison, 19-year-old Tony Robinson was shot and killed by a police officer. I'm not going to discuss whether or not these shootings were justified. However, we need to be aware of the systemic injustice against blacks that still exists in this country today. And sadly, Milwaukee and Wisconsin in general is one of the worst places in the country to be black. Here are some statistics about black lives in Milwaukee. Milwaukee is the ninth poorest city in the United States. 29.9% of people in Milwaukee live in poverty. 42.6% of children in Milwaukee live in poverty. Milwaukee is the most segregated city in the U.S. Milwaukee has the greatest segregation of poor from everyone else than any other metro region. Wisconsin has been ranked the worst state in the country for racial disparities between black and white children, according to the report released by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. The study looked at dozens of indicators from birth weight to the number of kids enrolled in preschool to household poverty. In one indicator, it found 70% of white children in Wisconsin live in households with middle-class incomes. By contrast, only 20% of black children fit that category. 79.7% children in Milwaukee public schools qualify for free or reduced lunches. Milwaukee public schools' graduation rate was only 62.8% in 2012. During a nationwide FBI coordinated investigation of human trafficking during the summer of 2013, 10 children were rescued in Wisconsin, and 100 suspected traffickers were arrested in a single day, numbers that were among the highest of all the cities participating in the probe. A study conducted by Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission between the years of 2010 and 12 showed that 77 youth ages 12 to 17 in Milwaukee were sex trafficked. Note that this only includes the youth that had contact with the Milwaukee Police Department during this time. Milwaukee has the highest incarceration rate for African American men in the nation, with 12.8, or one in every eight men, in state and local prison, nearly double the national average of 6.7%. In contrast, Wisconsin's rate of incarceration of white men is similar to the national average, and the rate for Hispanics is actually lower than the national average. Half of African American men in their 30s in Milwaukee County have been in state prison. The unemployment rate for black males 25 to 54 in Milwaukee is 52.7%. So what can we do? We live in a rather affluent area that is nearly all white and pretty removed from Milwaukee and the problems of the African Americans who live there. What could we do that would make any difference? Actually, there are a number of things we can do. A recent UUA newsletter listed about 10 ways that UUs could become more involved in the struggle for racial justice. Their first suggestion was to hang Black Lives Matter banners outside our churches. They say more and more churches need to do this. In fact, our fellow UU church, the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee, has hung this banner outside their church. The following is taken from an article by Derricka Williams of Fox News in Milwaukee. A banner with the words Black Lives Matter hangs outside the First Unitarian Society of Milwaukee on North Astor Street. It's an effort to stimulate systemic change. Leaders of a church in Milwaukee have joined the fight against racial and social injustices. The religious community is not made up of minorities, but in support, church leaders feel as though they need to be another voice of outrage. I want those intimately engaged in the struggle to see our support, Mary Devitt, a member of the church, said. The phrase on the outside of the building speaks to the values of those on the inside. One of the reasons I belong to this church is our principles form that kind of work in the community. They call for us to fight for justice and equality and respect for every human life, Devitt said. We need to change the way we respect black lives in our society as a whole. They need better education, jobs, to be in a situation where they are not so vulnerable. This taking of black lives without consequences needs to stop, Devitt said. With Milwaukee being one of the most segregated cities in the country, church members say the change must come from engagement, and that starts with the Black Lives Matter sign on the church and subsequent dialogue and action. I imagine some of you may be concerned about why it is Black Lives Matter, as it's part of our principles that all lives matter. Here is how UU Minister Reverend Dan Schatz of Bucksmont Unitarian Universalist Fellowship answered that question when he received this note. Good evening. I'm very upset at the signage that is outside your church stating Black Lives Matter. Since when has God chosen to see us by the color of our skin? The sign should be taken down and replaced with All Lives Matter. How will this nation of ours ever join together if we are constantly looking at everyone by their race? Unless you were actually there in Ferguson or New York or Cleveland, you do not have all the facts. A Bucks County resident. And this was Reverend Schott's response. Thank you for writing with your concern. Of course all lives matter. Central to Unitarian Universalism is the affirmation of the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Sadly, our society has a long history of treating some people as less valuable than others. Study after study has confirmed that in equivalent situations, African Americans and Latinos are treated with deadly force far more often than white people, and authorities held less accountable. Unfortunately, racial bias continues to exist even when it is no longer conscious. This, too, is confirmed by multiple studies. A lack of accountability in the use of force combined with unconscious bias is too often a deadly combination and one that could place police officers as well as the public in great danger. To say that Black Lives Matter is not to say that other lives do not. Indeed, it is quite the reverse. It is to recognize that all lives do matter and to acknowledge that African Americans are often targeted unfairly. Witness the number of African Americans accosted daily for no reason other than walking through a white neighborhood, including some like young Trayvon Martin who lost their lives. And that our society is not yet so advanced as to become truly colorblind. This means that many people of goodwill face the hard task of recognizing that these societal ills continue to exist and that white privilege continues to exist, even though we wish it didn't and would not have asked for it. I certainly agree that no loving God would judge anyone by their skin color. As a white man, I have never been followed by security in a department store or been stopped by police for driving through a neighborhood in which I didn't live. My African-American friends have, almost to a person, had these experiences. Some have been through incidents that were far worse. I owe it to the ideal that we share, the ideal that all lives matter, to take their experiences seriously and listen to what they are saying. To deny the truth of these experiences because they make me uncomfortable will be to place my comfort above the safety of others, and I cannot do that. I very much appreciate you writing to me, and I'm glad that we share the goal of coming to a day when people will not be judged, consciously or unconsciously, on the basis of their race. I believe that day is possible, too, but that it will take a great deal of work to get there. That work begins by listening to one another, and listening especially to the voices of those who have the least power in society. If nothing else is clear from the past few weeks, it is painfully evident that a great many people do not believe that they are treated fairly. Healing begins by listening to those voices and stories. No American is without responsibility, King proclaimed, and by going to Selma 50 years ago, Unitarian Universalists came to feel that its struggle was also their own. It's still our struggle today and will continue to be until all people are treated equally with dignity and respect. Black lives matter.
Would you please join us in body and spirit and sing hymn number 95, There Is More Love Somewhere.
from Where Are My People, a Black Unitarian Universalist on Selma and Ferguson by Reverend Kenny Wiley, October 15, 2014. Kneeling in front of Reverend Weeb's marker drove me to tears and to an understanding of history's importance. Finally, after ignoring the race problem for years, we showed up in Selma. But 50 years later, if we UU show up in Selma in 2015, but not in Ferguson right now, and not for all those black and brown victims of police violence in the sadly inevitable future, we will have not learned from our past. The harrowing truth is that I could be the next Mike Brown. My household had two parents. I have a college degree and a job. My pants don't sag. When I'm out protesting or canvassing, though, none of that matters. I cannot opt out of blackness, and I do not want to. In the wrong situation, though, my respectable nature may not save me from a racist police officer or citizen, nor from the ensuing character assassination. I would go from the decent, reasonably friendly guy some of you know to a mentally deranged, I have depression, Harvard dropout who was no angel and deserved what he got. I know some of my people, black people, would come to my defense. Some UUs and other friends would too. But would there be a broad movement on my behalf? Or would faith members send my dad and sister's thoughts and prayers before moving on? These questions keep me up at night. There are so many things to fight and fight for in the world. We mostly do a good job on climate justice and immigration. Black lives, too, are worth fighting for. When the next Ferguson happens, and sadly it will, we can and must do more. We have to show up, to be willing to follow others, and to be willing to change ourselves. Unitarian Universalists, you are my people, and you use my other people, of which some of you are, need you. We need you to show up. We need you to listen and to go beyond platitudes. Not everyone can travel hundreds of miles, but we can all do something, something beyond what we thought we could do. The next call to action for racial justice has arrived. My people, will we answer?
Oh, that's so